Welcome back. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is with me, and we're both with Ray Kurzweil. You talk about transcendence, which I found interesting. Your first book was about intelligent machines. This is about spiritual machines. Now, transcendence, it seems to me, is one of those things that we humans claim for ourselves. You say even that is at issue.
Well, there's a number of ways to consider that. I mean, one is to look at the spiritual values of evolution itself. If we look at an evolutionary process, take biological evolution, what do we notice? The entities that have been created through biological evolution over time have become more intelligent, more creative, more beautiful, more capable of higher order emotions like love, therefore more loving. And the concept of God we've put forth as an ideal of infinite levels of those very values. God is all-knowing. God is infinitely creative, infinitely intelligent, infinitely loving. So an evolutionary process, as it goes forward, actually grows in those very same values at an exponential level. Now, it never actually becomes infinite, so it doesn't actually achieve a godlike level, but it's rapidly moving in that direction. Therefore, we could say it's moving in a spiritual direction. It's becoming more spiritual. It's becoming closer to God. And that's how I see evolution, and I see technology in that light, and I see the evolution of our civilization by growing in its expressive powers through this technology and our ability to merge with it is a spiritual process. So that's part of the whole effort of transcendence. And we'll be able to express ourselves in more profound ways, create greater art and the other sort of transcendent expressions that we're able to make. Now, technology itself is a form of transcendence. If you consider, take music, it's a bunch of notes and silences put together. But music transcends just the ordinary notes. If you put the notes in just the right way and in the right context and with our cultural backgrounds and so on, we transcend from music. Now, all of art does that. And technology does that too. You put materials, which may include some software, in just the right order and sequence, and suddenly something magical happens. It's a synthesizer that allows someone to create music or something that overcomes a disability. But something magical happens from technology. It's a form of transcendence. And our ability to create that kind of transcendence is going to grow through the power of these kinds of technologies. And a whole other way to view this is, whatever it is we're doing in our own minds, when we transcend and have spiritual experiences or particularly intense emotional experiences or loving experiences, there are neurological correlates of all of this. There's something going on in our brains, and as we understand it more, we'll first of all have more insight into ourselves, and we'll also be able to essentially replicate this transcendence in our technology, and also enhance our own ability to experience transcendence through, as we merge with our technology, we'll be able to identify these neurological correlates and enhance those kinds of transcendence experiences.
You posit what to me is a very interesting thought experiment. In terms of this reverse engineering, assuming we are able to reverse engineer our consciousness, our brains, And a lot of the functions that go around that, and then we transfer that. Take me, for example. If we reverse engineer me and create essentially a download, a precise replica of who and what I am, and then transfer that into a computer or some device, you raise a question, which is, which one is then me? Which is an interesting question from your standpoint. It, to me, is even more interesting from my standpoint.
Because it's you?
Well, because it is I, and it's not clear which. I mean, it's as if I, in order to make that work, I have to bifurcate and become actually two different entities. And in some ways, it is a much more clarifying discussion, a much more clarifying way of getting around some of the issues we talk about with cloning than the cloning, because that gets you off into other things. But this to me is just very clarifying about what, you know, how we see ourselves and how to relate to our world around us.
Well, it really brings up in close focus the whole difference between objective and subjective reality. If we think about it objectively, which is we're looking at some other entities to which this is happening, there's not much confusion. I mean, you can describe exactly what would happen. You put in a person and you create a mental clone, and then the original person, if it's a non-destructive process, may not even know it has happened, or otherwise is unchanged. The new entity, since that entity has a copy of all the original person's memories and thoughts, will think that he, you know, grew up in Queens, New York, and has the whole same history as this original person, and somehow went into a scanner here and then woke up in the machine there. And that's what would happen, because that entity has the same memories and history as the other person, but now presumably knows that he is a copy, as another entity, and may have a body only in virtual reality, or may have a robotic body. But you can describe what would happen. Subjectively, it's more confusing. It brings up the issue, is this copy conscious or not? Some people say, well, it's a wonderful simulation. It's really remarkable how accurate it is. You know, I really can't tell the difference, but it's just a trick. This entity seems conscious, but it's just a machine. Machines can't be conscious, and therefore there's nobody home. But it really does bring up that issue of consciousness, and it's a very difficult issue. Philosopher David Chalmers makes the distinction between what he calls the easy and hard problems of consciousness. And very often people, when they're talking about it, slip into talking about the easy question. Not that the easy question is actually easy, but really talking about it from an objective perspective, as if consciousness were just a certain level of intelligent interaction, as opposed to the really mysterious sense of self and feeling we have that can't be fully explained by objective measurement. It's almost hard to describe the hard question of consciousness, which is why it's a slippery subject.
There are lots of people in what has been called the race for consciousness. Is that winnable?
What do you mean by the race?
I think I first heard this from John Taylor, who is at the King's College in London, who started out as a physicist and then changed and became a philosopher king, maybe. But he was talking about how people are trying to, in effect, pick the squirrel apart and find consciousness, and then other people are trying to put the squirrel back together.
Well, the race he's describing is an accurate, precise, representable, and entity that is consciousness, the ability to articulate that and then to do it.
Well, people very often merge what I think are two different issues. One is the objective issue of creating an entity that operates at human levels and even has a human-like personality, and that a lot of people would think is human. That's an objective level of performance. Sometimes we call that passing the Turing test, which means it's so human-like we can't tell the difference between it and an actual biological human. But that's that's an objective scientific question, and we can examine the brain as a sort of third-party entity and look at it as a very complex system and understand how it works. And we're actually further along in that process than most people realize. The brain is not one thing. It's actually hundreds of different regions, and each region is organized differently. And we've actually already reverse engineered about 15 of those several hundred regions and have very detailed mathematical models of how those regions work, and tests have shown that those are pretty accurate. So we've shown the feasibility of this process. But that's the objective issue of creating human-level intelligence. Consciousness is a more mysterious, really more philosophical issue. There's a role for philosophy outside of science, which is what does it mean to be conscious? And it's really we have to express that in first-person terms. I mean, I understand my consciousness, and I don't directly experience anyone else's consciousness. I hear about people's claims to be conscious and all the things they experience, and of course I accept that other humans are conscious because I'm built that way, or I'd go crazy if I didn't accept that. Or maybe people get mad at me, but
who'd take it amiss?
But philosophically, but as we go outside of human experience, there's going to be a basic disagreement. Some people will say, no, you've got to be a biological human or you can't be conscious. Just as people today say, you have to understand human language or you can't be conscious, and therefore animals aren't conscious. And it's not a resolvable issue. But this issue of consciousness is different from the issue of just creating a human-level entity.
This is Ray Kurzweil. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, we'll all be back, the three of us, in just a moment. Please stay tuned.